ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
The Breakfast Wrap is your chance to find out just what's happening here and around the world. From the ABC's National Breakfast Radio program, we take the very best interviews with the people that matter.
John Howard, welcome back.
Former FBI analyst is the assistant minister.
But enter cop turned chairmaker Glenn Rundle.
And all of those guys were from just one show. The Breakfast Wrap, 25 minutes at 11:30 every morning on Radio National, or stream it whenever you like on ABC Listen.
It was meant to be a visionary document to win back young Australians and to help reverse the fracturing of mainstream politics. But according to one poll, it's the most unpopular federal budget in more than 30 years. So, how do the major parties stop the collapse of Australia's two-party system and the rise of parties like One Nation? Today, Michelle Grattan, political correspondent at The Conversation, on why it'll take more than just bold policy. I'm Sam Hawley on Gadigal Land in Sydney. This is ABC News Daily. Michelle, we're in an era where a lot of people have really had it with the major parties. We've had the rise of the independents, now One Nation is doing pretty well. We saw that in the recent Farah by-election.
You are not going to be the forgotten people anymore. We are proud Australians. We want our country back.
There really is a lot of cynicism out there, isn't there?
Certainly, we've seen that increasing in recent years. Indeed, the surveys show here and abroad, because it's not just an Australian phenomenon, that it's increased a lot over decades. And that presents real problems for the major parties. I think that people just see them as being disconnected from the ordinary population, being in it for themselves, not responding to their interests. And it seems that the parties just can't combat that feeling and indeed don't do enough to combat it. But I think this surge of One Nation in the last half a year has been quite remarkable, because they weren't polling all that well at the general election.
All right. Well, Michelle, let's have a look then at what we're seeing here, because the major parties, Labor and the Liberal Party, are really trying to engage in rather big policy change or big ideas. And the thought is that that actually might stop these voters abandoning them. So let's just unpack what they're doing. Now, it's thought the change to negative gearing and capital gains tax in last week's budget, it was aimed at that. It was trying to make sure that unhappy younger voters saw a government doing something to help them. Just tell me what you thought of that move.
I think the first thing is to look at the reaction, and the government would be very disappointed that this whole notion of intergenerational equity hasn't translated into support for the budget and the budget's measures. For example, on capital gains tax, many young people are saying, well, this is being used by the young to try to get ahead by acquiring shares, other assets. They mightn't be able to get into the housing market yet, but they want to accumulate wealth, which will help them later to get into that market. Now, the government says, well, that would only affect a very small proportion. But in this age of social media, even a small proportion can magnify an issue and make it seem larger than it is. On the housing package itself, the actual tax measures really don't necessarily help young people into the market, at least in the shorter term, because they slow the house price rises only a little bit, and the modelling shows that they result in about 30,000 fewer newer homes being built over the shorter term.
Okay, so it's changes designed to win over younger voters, but in fact it might not do that at all. And a big problem, of course, is that the Prime Minister and the Treasurer had to break an election promise to deliver this. We can see from polling, post-budget polling, that this is not a popular budget. They're not the figures I assume the government would want to be seeing at this point.
They perhaps did not anticipate that some of these changes, especially around capital gains tax, would get into such detailed and negative critiques. Now, this goes beyond young people. It's affecting people in estate planning, leaving estates to their children. Some of these would be affected, not all. Mm. And of course, small businesses. Now, Jim Chalmers says that there'll be consultation with that sector. But meanwhile, of course, there's a lot of negative feedback. And that's proving difficult to deal with. And Jim Chalmers is saying, well, I'm not talking about the politics, I'm talking about the substance.
Now, obviously, we are aware that people who want to defend the current tax arrangements, or they think that the current housing market is working just fine, they will want to focus on this element of it, the political element of it. I understand that. But we're focused on the substantive issue, the substantive change.
But to dismiss all these concerns as just politics, I think, just sounds not good.
And the opposition, of course, it's coming up with the slogans pretty quickly, isn't it? A tax on family trusts. It's dubbed a death tax.
There is another tax that none of us saw in the budget initially, and that's a death duty. And it is very clear now that Labor is going after what are known as discretionary testamentary trusts, but this is a death duty on Australians.
Now, you know, breaking promises and these slogans, and as you say, in an era of social media, they're very effective, aren't they?
Well, they can be. However, I do think, Sam, we should put a caveat in here because this is the immediate fallout. Mm. We're a long way from an election, and what we know of the news cycle is things move on. However, there will be legacy effects of breaking promises, and when some people feel worse off or anticipate feeling worse off, then you do get the negatives remaining.
All right, so Michelle, let's come in a moment to whether or not this bold policy will in the end help Labor actually win over some of these younger voters and stop them departing the traditional two-party system. But look, on the other side, Angus Taylor, his budget in reply speech was also full of ideas for policy change, wasn't it? And they were bold, weren't they?
They certainly were, and risky too. Mm-hmm. I think they fall into a couple of main changes. One deals with denying permanent residents welfare benefits.
This government is funding welfare for non-citizens as soon as they arrive on our soil. Labor puts Australians second, whereas the Coalition will always put Australians first. Yeah.
Now, I think that this is clearly responding to One Nation and Liberal supporters who are going off in that direction. But I do think it's a risky policy because it will alienate many people, in particular ethnic communities, Chinese, people of Indian heritage. It's also a policy that is flawed in substance because a lot of permanent residents are people who are here for a very long time and for one reason or another don't become citizens. So there's that policy. A very interesting policy, and I think a policy with many virtues, is to index income tax brackets. Mm-hmm.
When your wages rise just to keep up with inflation, you're no better off. But you pay higher taxes as though you are better off. This is bracket creep. Under a coalition government I lead, this will end.
Yeah. Now, people, and especially younger working people get pushed up into higher brackets, and this makes it harder for them to save. And indexation would keep governments honest. In other words, it denies a government this automatic and unseen increase in revenue. So it's not a popular measure usually with governments.
But an idea that might be quite popular among voters.
Well, it should be popular among voters, but it's not an idea that's probably very easy to sell in a retail sense. It doesn't come across with the sort of zing that announcing a tax cut does.
All right. OK, so, Michelle, both parties, perhaps with an eye on what is going on with the fracturing of politics in the UK and, of course, the rise of One Nation here, they're announcing these big policy changes and ideas. So do you think, though, that this is the way to keep Australians interested in their parties? Do you think particularly younger voters will buy this?
Well, certainly we know younger voters are not buying the budget at this instant. I think a useful point to make, Sam, is that what we've seen in Budget Week is both parties are articulating policies that fit their values. Labor's policies rebalance the tax system to tax assets more harshly and to put workers more in the frame for tax breaks. And I think that we will see that happening further in future Labor budgets. On the other hand, we have with the coalition basically an emphasis on smaller government because tax indexation would provide less revenue for a government to operate and overall a tighter corset within which a future coalition government would have to operate. Now, as to your question about whether younger people will buy this, I think that the electorate at the moment is so disillusioned, young, middle-aged, particularly perhaps older voters too, that I don't think you will see this disillusionment with the political system fade away anytime soon.
But this reminder that these two major parties are giving voters, a reminder of what they stand for, is that a tactic, do you think, that is necessary? What else could they possibly be doing at this point to stop the fracturing of the political system?
I think it is something that is necessary and is desirable, so people have a clear idea of the choices available. But I also think that the behaviour of politicians is quite important. Little things. For example, we get all the time these misuses of entitlements, even though they might be formally within the rules. We have even something like, on a completely different front, the use of talking points, so that you see ministers or shadow ministers standing up saying the same line all the time. You sort of feel somehow these people are not authentic. When you go beyond a certain point and just seem like, as we call them, talking heads, then people do become cynical. They turn off. They think, well, these are not real people. They're just political professionals in it for themselves.
All right. Well, tell me then, Michelle, despite these big policy changes, do you think we are still perhaps at the start of the end of the two-party system in Australia?
I think the two-party system is in deep trouble. I'm not sure that we're at the start of the end, but certainly I think it's going to stay in trouble. It's going to be a more complicated environment for the two-party system, and it's hard really for it to get itself out of trouble. One way that it could tackle its many problems is to give more attention to trying to select the best candidates, to trying to attract more people of real talent. But there's a problem here too, because if people see a political system that, if not broken, is at least badly cracked, why would you go into politics?
Michelle Grattan is a political correspondent at The Conversation and a professorial fellow at the University of Canberra. This episode was produced by Sydney Peed. Audio production by Sam Dunn. Our supervising producer is David Cody. I'm Sam Hawley. Thanks for listening.